Welcome to Permission to Heal. I am Marcy Brockman, and I am so glad you're here. In this podcast, we engage in meaningful, deeply human conversations using our voices to inspire connection, compassion, understanding, empathy, and wholehearted wellness. I want you to find the courage to transform yourself no matter what others tell you. Only you can give yourself permission to trust yourself, permission to take care of yourself, permission to follow your heart and desires, and build a life of love, home, and belonging. Through sharing our stories, we will help each other to heal and create the healthy, meaningful lives we richly deserve. We only need our own permission to begin. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Permission to Heal. Hi, I am Marcy Brockman, and I'm extremely glad that you're here joining us. Today, I have a very special guest. Melissa Jones is here. She is a fellow teacher and a very inspiring woman who is leading the charge for our young ladies. Melissa Jones is an inspiring girls empowerment coach, a highly effective licensed classroom teacher. She teaches fifth grade, at least this year, who helps girls learn daily positive habits so they can feel confident in who they are and connect with other girls in an empowering environment. She has been motivating and cultivating connections among hundreds of girls and providing families with resources. She has gained over 22,680 hours of experience. I want to talk to you about how you calculated that, because that's pretty impressive. After noticing patterns in girls across four different school environments related to the struggles with self-esteem and confidence, and having struggled into adulthood with low self-esteem and lack of self-confidence and strategies herself, she now uses her personal transformation and research with experience-based strategies to elevate girls to live their best life while linking arms in a community centered around growth and empowerment. I can't think of anything better than that. As a girl mom and as a former Girl Scout leader and a teacher myself, I think that's fabulous. She engages them in activities that motivate girls to take action toward feeling confident and empowered, focusing on their strengths instead of their challenges. So she runs the Girls Positivity Club, working directly with elementary school and middle school girls and their families virtually creating positive communities of girls. She teaches lessons in confidence, positive daily habits, and learning how to have positive relationships with each other and other girls and other family members. That's amazing. And she's been on TV. She's been featured on WTHR NBC, Fox 59, Idea Mensch, and in mid-December, she's going to be on CBS 4. And she lives in Indiana. I'm assuming these are Indiana versions of stations. That's extremely cool.
Thank you.
Fabulous. That's fabulous. Yeah, you know, I think a lot of, I'm so glad that you're here. Before I launch into things, I have this habit of doing that. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here, Melissa. Really pleased thank as punch you so that you much. Are.
Oh gosh, thank you. It's an honor. And I love talking with you and I love everything you're doing as well.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I finally feel like after I don't know how many years I'm in the right place doing the right thing at the right time. And that's a really good feeling. And I'm loving this podcast. I get to talk to all you fabulous people. And I feel like every day or every time I engage in one of these interviews, I'm having like, it's part therapy session and part chatting with my girlfriends. Like we're just missing some wine. That's a really good idea for the next episode. And I just, it's like the most amazing thing I've ever done, I think, or one of them.
Oh, I love it.
This is fabulous.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you.
I think that there are so many things that I could have avoided going through or could have had been less severe and less personally challenging if I had had a person like you and the Girls Positivity Club in my life. I think that's phenomenal. And I'm sure that's what your goal is.
It is. And that's exactly why I started it. I would have just really same thing. I would have thrived to have something like this growing up as a girl and just, I think things would have been a lot easier for me. And I just would have had so many more tools and strategies for how to deal with things beyond just what my mom could tell me, because I think our parents too are limited in their own experiences.
Sure.
So it's good to be that outside person who is the coach for them, and sure, another voice, you know, just pouring into them. So,
and you're not their mom and you're not their classroom teacher. So they get to think, yeah, of you as this cool, like mom-ish type or big sister-ish or auntie, yeah, type. And yeah, you get to be the guide on the side, you know, and sort of, yeah, be friends, but a little mentoring also, kind of, you know, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you. That's what I do.
Marvelous. Okay. Before we get into the hows and the whys and all of that, I usually do these, yeah, six questions to begin the conversations with. Yeah. You know, I like the differences in how people answer the same thing. It's just, mm-hmm, this sociological thing in my head. I just think it's very cool. Okay. So what five words would you use to describe yourself?
I am kind, hardworking, determined, compassionate, and a risk taker.
That's a really great combination.
Thank you.
I could say the same thing about myself, I think.
Yeah. I think
I like the risk taker thing. Go ahead. Thanks. Sorry.
You're fine. I think I would have answered this differently a few years ago.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And in a few, yeah, years from now, or in less than, yeah, a year from now, you might answer it differently again.
Yes,
and
absolutely,
that's the beauty of a woman who is evolving, is that every, yeah, day is different. You see a different part of yourself grow out of what was there before. It's a beautiful,
yes,
thing.
Yes, I agree. It is.
Absolutely. Okay. What is your favorite way to spend a day?
So my favorite way to spend a day would be in the morning. I would have a slow start to myself, drinking coffee, sitting in my office, journaling, just having those quiet moments. I like to sit. I have a bench behind me that has pillows and I like to look out the window. It's very peaceful. We live in the country, so there's really not much around us, and that's really calming for me.
That's lovely.
So I would start that. Thank you. I would start that way. And then I would say the rest of the day, I would accomplish some tasks because I am an achiever. I feel better and more at peace with myself when I achieve or accomplish something in a day. And so whether that's for the business or whether that's just personally at home, I would want to do that. And then the rest of the time, spend time with my husband and son and our dogs and just being,
yeah,
just sitting by the fire or playing outside or anything really.
Sounds, yeah, great to me. I'm like that too. I try not to be a workaholic because I know that takes it to the other extreme, but I really feel better about myself when I know I've accomplished a few things. It could be just laundry and dishes and making the bed, but I have to,
yes,
do something. I can't,
yes,
just, although Saturday I didn't do all that much, but you know, it was raining and we were tired.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, I know.
Okay. What is your favorite childhood memory?
So this is a hard one for me because my parents are happy people. My dad's passed away, but my mom, still, like, they're just fun people. And so they create a lot of experiences. But I would say if I'm thinking of my own self-empowerment, there was this one softball game where I was not like the star player. I wasn't the athlete. I was just kind of a participant in sports.
Right.
And I got more into dance as I got older. And I, in this one game, had like the best hit of my life. I scored, I think, like a double or a triple, which I never did. And then I ended up scoring the winning run.
Wow.
RBI. And the moment, I think, is such a big deal for me, not just because I never had experienced that before, but it was the first time that I really felt seen, mm-hmm, by my peers. And they did like the movie thing where they lifted me up. And as cheesy as that is, that was like one of the only times in my growing up where I really felt like I mattered and I was seen beyond just the small group of friends that I had.
Sure.
So I think that's why it was such a big deal. So yeah, so that's one of my favorites.
That's huge, Melissa. That's huge.
Yeah.
Wow. That was my favorite day too. If that had happened to me,
yeah,
my favorite day too. to be hoisted up like that and to have that cheering and belonging and really feel like you're part of the team and you're not just a liability. You know, I was the kid that they used to fight over who stuck with her, you know, like, oh, we don't want her. That was me.
Yeah.
So, you know, clearly that was happening.
I know. I was that person. I was usually picked last in the, I hated it when people said, or the coaches or whatever said, you know, we're picking teams for dodgeball or kickball or whatever. And I was usually when I was like, okay, if I'm not very last, it's okay. Like, I just want to be second to last or, but they waited to pick me. So it's fine. I'm probably stronger for it anyway. So
absolutely. And I don't think I remember who any of those people are. They're not a part of my life. It didn't affect me at all. You know, in the moment when I was 8 and they were like, no, you get stuck with Marcy. I felt terrible, but it's not like it infected my life in any way. So, so be it. What is your favorite meal?
Always Mexican food of any kind. It is one of my comfort foods completely. So anything Mexican food, I will eat anything.
Spicy?
I will do spicy. Now, yes, I will probably not like ghost pepper spicy, but I would do
jalapenos. Yeah,
anything. Yes, I will.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I like all of that.
So that's awesome.
It's my comfort. It's like that's a weird comfort food.
I not many people, that's unique. It's not many people have answered that. I used to like spicy. Yeah. And then after my pregnancy with my daughter, my tolerance for spicy just completely disappeared. I can't tolerate it anymore. I used to be able to eat anybody under the table with spicy food and I was fine. And now you even wave a pepper near me, I might get nauseous, you know?
Well, I think the opposite with me. I think the older I've gotten and after I had my son, it kind of the opposite happened. I couldn't before and then I could. So, you know, pregnancy does weird things to your
totally
body.
Changes. My hair went from straight to wavy, you know, like totally changes everything. Okay. Number 5, what one piece of advice would you like to give your younger self? I think I can predict this.
I would say break through my own glass ceiling. I think I held myself back from so many opportunities and just having any confidence in myself. I always doubted myself before I did anything. And I was always worried about being good enough. I was always worried about who might be better at me, you know, at whatever, anything really. I mean, the more I reflect on it, the more I see that I did that.
Sure.
More than any other quality, I guess. So I would just go back and I would say like, just break that ceiling. And I still kind of work through that today as far as, you know, limitations. And I think we all do that. You know, it's like, all right, I can go bigger, you know, or I can do this and just doing the scary thing and just making yourself do it. So yeah, that's what I would say.
That's an excellent answer. You know, I think that a lot of times we tend to make things that we're unsure of much more scary in our heads than they are in reality. And then when we finally just sort of jump in with both feet or rip the Band-Aid off or whatever metaphor you want to use, it's never as bad or as scary as we think it's going to be.
Yes. And even if it doesn't work out, you end up, as cheesy as it sounds, like you end up learning so much from the mistake or from just the path. Sometimes when it doesn't work out the way it's supposed to, well, the way
you want it
to. Yes. Thank you. The way you want it to work out, it ends up being the correct path. You just didn't realize it was.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were moments in my life, especially as a young, like teenage adolescent, where I knew I wanted something and I probably had the talent to go to be successful at it, but held myself back from trying my best because I was so afraid that I would fail. And somehow it made sense in my 15-year-old brain that if I didn't try as hard as I could, then if I failed, it really wouldn't be a slight against me because, well, I didn't try my hardest anyway, you know?
Yeah.
What the hell is that? That's like the screwed up inside out logic, you know?
Well, and I think for me too, like I would try out for something. And then if I didn't make it, that was the end of it. Like I never tried out again. I never tried it again. And that's kind of the same upside down logic. It's like,
Yeah.
Okay. If you really want the thing, you've got to try out more than one time and you've got to keep doing the thing until you get better at it to where you'll make the thing. So to me, it's like, I tried out for, you know, cheerleading a couple of times and especially like being a Colts cheerleader for the Indianapolis Colts. And I
did?
Tried out.
That's yeah, badass. That's awesome.
There was this big audition. And before that, they had these prep classes you could take. So I went to these prep classes and I walked in and there were these girls sizing me up. And, you know, it was like, you know, checking everybody out. And they made us do poses in front of the mirror and all this stuff. And I did not have the confidence for it. I remember the choreography I was behind on. The more I tried, the more I got frustrated. And so I ended up leaving and going to the McDonald's drive-thru and eating a couple of cheeseburgers on the way back. And I never showed up again. And that was actually the worst thing I could have done, because if I really wanted that, I mean, not that that's the end goal in life, but
right.
If I really wanted it, I should have, why not show up again and just be like, all right, girls, I'm back. I'm going to get the choreography this time, or maybe even ask one of them for help, you know, and be the person who's like, I feel embarrassed asking, but I really want to do this and I need some help. Like, I think
or at least just show up and try my best, even if I don't get it, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Right. And still, and show up more than one time. Like, I bought this pass that was like 5 sessions. I only went the one time, went to McDonald's and then never came back. And I was like, right. Well, I'm done with that dream, which is, that doesn't make any sense. So,
no. And
that was when I was in my early 20s, but still, it doesn't matter. You know, I look back, I'm like, you know, don't give up, keep trying.
Yeah, there were a lot of instances in my life now that you're talking that I had completely forgotten about and didn't even include in my book because I totally forgot about them until this minute. But there was a time
really?
I had done theater in high school and in college. And then afterward, I thought like I would do community theater. I mean, I sing, I do a little, not so much dancing, but I could, you know, move on stage. And so I tried out for a few parts like community theater type things. And I got into one and it wound up not going because we lost our funding in the theater and it crashed and burned. But there were a few like small regional theaters that I went to and I did a couple of auditions and never got called back. And I stopped mm-hmm. pursuing it, even though it was always mm-hmm. something I really wanted to do. I felt stupid. Everybody else seemed to know everyone else. And I'm like, I don't really have much to write on a resume besides like, you know, I had a bit part in Pippin in college, you know, like I just felt ridiculous. So I stopped going. And then there was one time where I went to a recording studio in Huntington, which is a town about 10 miles from here, where they were doing auditions for backup singers for some commercial or something. And I had never sung in a recording studio before. And I didn't know, like, it was just really like fish out of water. It was very weird. And the key that the backup music was in was different than the key that I had practiced it in. And so it was just like a helicopter motor, just crash and burn. It was awful. And I just ran out of there, like, don't even look at me. And I never looked back. And I thought, well, gee, yeah, I would probably have been good at that had I given myself a chance. But
yeah, it's like, you want to feel seen and you want to feel like you can show up even if you embarrass yourself or even if you fail at something. I think that's
right.
One of the hardest lessons
yeah.
you know, that we face, especially failing in front of other people. I think that's when it's like a humiliation and we internalize it. And maybe the people around us don't even know that we were that humiliated. But I think in our minds, we can create this whole story. And then by the time that we decide that we're not going to show up again, people have forgotten about what had happened the first time. So
actually, they might have even forgotten about it 5 seconds later.
Right.
It was only
exactly.
important to us because it was central to our experience.
Exactly.
It wasn't central to anyone
yeah.
else's experience. They were probably worried about their own thing.
Exactly.
They might not have even noticed yeah. that we were even a part of anything. You're like, yeah, well, that's
right.
a brown-haired girl. She's gone. What was her name? We don't even know. She never showed up again, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And I think that some of that comes with maturity and mm-hmm. life experience when you sort of realize that even if I do publicly embarrass myself, the earth isn't going to open up and swallow me whole. You know, lightning's right. not going to strike me in the head. Nothing is going to happen. There are no negative repercussions. You know, yeah. I think to me, the worst thing is to just say, what if forever and not go mm-hmm. for it? You know, well, totally. What if I had auditioned and what if I had not gotten on stage? And, you know, maybe I could have done that or what would have happened? And I yes. personally hate to live with that. So,
yeah, I love that. Yeah, that's really good. Because I think, you know, the grit part is the part that's missing from a yeah. lot of people, you know, and just knowing those action steps, even if they're small, you know, they make such a huge difference.
Absolutely.
And they impact everything, you know, and it, yeah, it all goes back to that.
Yeah. And it affects globally how you approach every challenge in life, you know, having yes. the grit, what I used to call frustration tolerance before I heard the term grit. You know, like how much are you willing to tolerate being frustrated in trying to achieve whatever it is, whether it's learning how to do algebra or singing on stage or becoming a professional cheerleader? Like, it doesn't really matter what the thing is. How much do you want it to be able to tolerate the frustration until you get there?
Yes.
That stick-to-itiveness.
Yes, yes. And I always tell my kids in class, like, it's the easy way to give up. Anybody can give up. You can give up in 5 seconds, but right. it's the sticking with it that matters. And it's the raising your hand that matters. And it's the doing the thing one time and another time and another time that starts to add up to help you make progress, because the giving up is the easy part. So
exactly. I'm sure you're probably a phenomenal teacher. Your students probably adore you.
Oh, thank you.
We can pick this out. We know. Okay. Last question. And then we'll move on to the meat of this. Although this has already been so much fun. What is the one thing you would most like to change about the world?
I have a lot of things, but I guess I came back to, I just want people to see the good in others, because there is so much good in the world. And I think it's all about perspective and what you choose to see and the people you choose to surround yourself with. And I know that there are circumstances that people can't control as well, so I'm not taking that lightly, but I think it all goes down to kindness and just seeing the good and just being open to other people who are different from you. And just knowing that it's those little things that can have a ripple effect
yeah.
on the world. I mean, as silly as that sounds, it is the smiling or the making small talk with a cashier. And it is the asking about, you know, when you notice someone's off, just asking if they're okay or whatever that is. It can be right. a million little things. And it's those kindnesses that add up to change. So I think that seeing the good and just having that kindness just in the back of your mind all the time is, you know,
it's everything.
Really,
yeah.
And it is. And everyone has bad days. I mean, I'm not saying that, but you know what? I think too, finding the kindness when you're having a bad day is even more powerful, because
absolutely.
It changes you, it changes them, you know, it changes everything.
Absolutely. It's completely evolutionary, revolutionary, actually both.
Yeah. Yes.
Actually both.
Yeah.
Actually both.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always used to watch my grandmother. My grandmother was one of those people who could walk in a room that she's never been in before, and somehow she knows like 5 people, or at mm-hmm. least appears to know 5 people, at least from my perception yeah. as a little girl. And she would just talk to people. Strangers would call her grandma. She was perfectly happy with it. You know, she just remembered everyone's names. She remembered everyone's kids' names and their husbands' names, and would ask questions and was just genuinely interested. And I remember feeling that was magnetic. That was magical.
Yes.
And
it is.
Wanting to be that way, you know, and I, mm-hmm. I was a very, sounds kind of crazy coming out of my mouth now, but I was a very shy child. And I sort of, I literally talked myself out of being shy when I was a freshman in high school, because I realized, wow. like I said a minute ago, I realized that the world was not going to open up and swallow me into the earth. And that if I embarrassed yeah. myself by saying something, I'd live through it, but that I didn't right. want to miss things by being a wallflower and not participating mm-hmm. and not joining yeah. into the conversation. Because what I wanted more than anything was to feel like I belonged, was to feel yeah. connected in the community of other students and so on. And I was holding myself back. And then one day I was standing there with a group of people who I knew, and they were all joking around. And I said, okay, you have a funny line in your head, just say it and see what happens. And I said it and everyone laughed and they're like, oh, you're so funny, Marcy. Oh my God. And I was like, I can do this. And like, I never was shy again after that. And so now people look at me and they're like, you were shy? What are you, freaking nuts? You know?
But it just that one moment, and that's it. What it's all about. Belonging, you know, that's all people want is to know that they're seen and to belong.
Absolutely.
And once they truly feel that, and that's why I do my groups, is to cultivate that. But once that happens, it's like a game changer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure you see that happen right in front of your eyes with the girls in your group.
I do. Yep. It's incredible. It's my favorite part of what I do, because that's if I would say that's the underlying message, is to help them belong, help them know that they can be different than the other girls in the group. They can have things in common, but they all belong and we're all connected around a common goal. And that's just being better than we were yesterday and just continuing to grow and just learn from each other.
That's great. And you're building relationships and building self-trust and self-compassion and trust and compassion to others and empathy. And that's wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's just going to set the girls up to be successful and be extraordinary young women in their own right forever. It's invaluable.
And that's what I thought is what I started learning through my own transformation about 3 years ago is just that they don't have to wait until they're adults to learn these things.
And in fact, they're better off learning them now.
Yes, because then the habits are ingrained. And when hard things do happen, they have healthy things to draw from. They already have the habits in place. And even if they just implement a couple of them, they're further ahead than most of us were as young girls. And women and young women, because I know so many young women and even, you know, my age who are just learning how to do this, or sadly, some of them never learn.
And they just continue
the pattern of like not believing in themselves. And it breaks my heart because I want that for all women and all girls. So, yeah. So that's why it's so important to just pour into them when they're young and just help them with all of these things so that as they grow, they grow with these good habits and hopefully help girls around them.
And are probably, you know, they'll be confident enough in themselves and their own resiliency and their own compassion and their own skills and talents and at the same time, healthy boundaries so that they won't get stuck in unhealthy relationships and be victimized by abuse and all of that other stuff that just further puts us back and damages our whole psyche and everything as we try to move forward in life. Because then there's all those other things to get over if they had known how to sort of say no to that and not get involved, they could have sidestepped the whole situation. Not to say that it's going to be a cure-all and end-all because everything's, you know, but it's many steps in the right direction. Go ahead.
Yeah.
You just what?
Well, I just had a girl in my group actually who had a direct experience with boundaries, if you don't mind my sharing.
No, absolutely. Play, share away. I was going to ask you more specifics about the group anyway. So good.
Yeah. So I had this girl in my coaching group and she was talking to me about how her main issue is around friendship. And so it was surprising to me because she's a very nice girl and she's very giving and all of these things. And she kept talking about this one girl and this one girl who just would talk about her behind her back, would whisper to another girl and look at her and do all the things that we know are toxic that girls can do to each other.
Sure.
And this girl's in fourth grade. And so I said, you know, when you journal, so I was like coaching her through like, you know, strategies and what she can do. She was like, well, I don't feel comfortable keeping my journals in my room because when this girl comes to my house, she goes through all of my things. So we had a really good conversation. I helped her think through like qualities of her friends. I'm like, okay, tell me about Molly. What's her, you know, what are her qualities? She was like kind, wonderful, you know, creative, all these great. I'm like, okay, tell me about this girl. And she was like demanding, rude, goes through my things, you know, whatever. And I was like, okay, tell me about this friend. Sweet, giving, like, I was like, okay, do you hear any difference? And so what we ended up doing is unpacking the fact that she knew this girl was toxic, but she didn't know how to set the boundary. And so we went through strategies. Now this was a one-on-one call, so it was very private, but we went through strategies and then I just left it up to her because it really is her choice, you know, as sure. far as what she implements. And I recommend, but then the next time I followed up with her, she had cut off that friendship and she Excellent. Set that clear boundary. And I was so proud of her. And it was shocking to me because I didn't know if she would. She's a pretty shy girl. So I didn't know if she would be that bold, but I think she had just had enough. And I try to point out that, you know, there are certain boundaries that you don't break in a friendship, like going through each other's things, looking for whatever, and just making you feel uncomfortable and just listening to their bodies as far as when she was doing that and going through your things, how did you feel? And she talked about how uncomfortable and all of that. And so I said, you know, that's a good sign that that's the wrong person. So Absolutely. We talk about,
you got to trust that.
Ourselves with, yes. And just to listen to your inner voice and that you have to surround yourself with positive people. And, you know, the other girls that she described, and like, you know, those are the people that you want to be around. And you should never feel afraid when your friend comes over that they're going to find something and use it against you. Like that's sure. That's a big sign that it's, you know,
unhealthy. So, definitely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So hopefully that sticks. And I hope that she can apply that as she gets older too.
I hope so. Yeah. The first thing I thought of when you said that is, well, why the heck is she even in this girl's house? You know, like,
I know. I think she was the kind of person who was just kind to everyone. I mean, I know that about her. And she was just like, you know, just accepting of everyone. But I think even when you're a really accepting, kind person, you have to have boundaries because otherwise everyone's going to walk all over you, or you're just going to accept everyone and you're going to accept the wrong things instead sure. of having a quality that you deserve, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So Girls Positivity Club is a group thing that you do. It's online, right?
It is right now. It started in person. So this all started back when my dad was going through brain cancer and so it was a big shock to our family. We had no idea that he actually had brain cancer. And he drove down to Florida and his sisters lived there and they took him to the hospital the next day because they said he was acting off. And then long story short, he had glioblastoma, which is a very aggressive cancer. And so luckily I had some good habits in place because I had been going through this weight loss transformation and this wellness journey. I had lost 50 pounds.
Mazel tov.
Thank you.
That's huge.
And through I know I worked my ass off. but I was part of this community of women online and the teachings that the leader, so Danette May is the nutrition person. And so I joined her program because it was affordable. And then I just applied her teachings and it was all about self-love. And she did meditation and she did, you know, there are mindful workouts so that you have an intention in mind. You know, you have an abundant workout, you have a love workout, you have, you know, you set these intentions. And so that was her whole philosophy. And so that transferred to helping me go through my dad's cancer. And wow. then I started thinking, why am I not doing this for girls? Because it's working for me. And my God, I'm having all these huge breakthroughs. So I started getting the idea when I was in the midst of my lowest point to start these clubs at lunchtime. So I started with my fourth graders who I had at the time. And I just started these lunch groups. I just started teaching them what I was learning. And I put my own twist on it. And then I just put in some art and they get creative in different ways. And then it grew from lunchtime. And then I looped with that same group of girls the next year. So I had 2 years with them at lunch and then it grew to an after-school program. And then it went district wide. I went to two schools. And then I was volunteering at the Boys and Girls Club doing that population just on my own. And then COVID. Right. So I was really getting momentum. And I was really growing. And then I figured, well, I can't quit. So yeah. I decided to pivot and I offered my groups on Zoom. I created my group coaching and it's just kind of grown from there. And so, yeah, I have all kinds of groups that I meet with.
And Zoom. Now you can do more because you don't have to travel. And you can get exactly. people that aren't just in your area in Indiana. You could get kids all over the country.
Exactly. And that's my ultimate goal, is I want to reach more families of girls and more girls, and for them to know that whether they're in New York or whether they're in Massachusetts or sure. California, you know, we can all come together and just empower each other and have that sense of belonging and learn something and have fun. Because the part that they love the most is the creative part. And yeah. I just tie it in with my lesson, and it works. They love it. So.
That's very cool. So you meet once a week with the groups?
Yes, we do. So I have different versions. So I have a 6-week, and we meet once a week, and I choose themes based on what I've noticed that the girls are telling me that they need. I've done some surveys, and just through my own experience in the classroom, just reading kids, as you know, as a teacher, sure. you, if you're a good teacher, you can read kids, and you try things. And some of the groups you think are going to be awesome flop. And then the ones that they latch onto and they go with are like your best ones. And those are the surprises. It's like, I did not know they were going to really be into that topic. So like the calming and anxiety relief and things, like I knew that was a need, but they just are like sponges with all of that. And yeah. so that's become a really high priority for me, is to teach the girls just different ways to have self-care and to, just have healthy ways to handle stress and anxiety, especially with everything crazy with school. All
yeah,
the
this year especially. Yeah. Everybody's so anxious. Mental health is crazy. Yeah, that's. It's, yeah. We think we're exhausted as teachers. I think the kids are beyond frustrated and exhausted and sad, and they don't have the life experience we have to know that this is hopefully going to be a short-lived thing, and that. At some point when the vaccine and herd immunity happen, then it'll all sort of go back to normal slowly. And I just see them. They just look so defeated.
I know.
It breaks my heart.
I know. And it's nice. We were talking about, I know, the masks off air and how we can't really see their faces, but Zoom allows for them to have their mask off. And so it's nice to even see their faces, see how they're reacting, you know, and that's, it's a nice, just little win, I guess, with the groups.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So you have coaching groups and a 2021 roadmap workshop coming up.
I do. So I am kicking off the new year with just teaching them to have a vision for 2021 and how to create, you know, their vision for what they want to happen, what they want to achieve, the people they want to surround themselves with. So it's a form of a vision board workshop. And so we're just going to get creative, and we're going to pull from different categories, you know, your school life, your home life, your friends, and your activities, your interests, like just things that they can look forward to. Because I think what we can get into with all of the pandemic is that there's nothing to look forward to. And I don't think that's true. I think you create your own vision, and there are things that can happen. You know, even if you are stuck at home, you can still, if you're artistic, I mean, I have this girl in my group right now who has written a novel, and she's in fifth grade, and she illustrates dragons, and she's like really into the Wings of Fire series, and she has her own version, and it's legit. Like, it's very good. Like, she was creating this wolf dragon today. And so her biggest issue is she's very shy. And I've noticed her over time from being in my groups and being in my classroom. So I do have a few of my students in my groups, just because they wanted to hop on. They're like, we're in, you know, so, but she's raises her hand a little bit more in class. It's still, you know, not every day necessarily, but I, you know, those are the kids you always call on. Cause like, oh my God, she's raising her hand, you know? Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
And, yes. And it's that way for them to feel that little bit of confidence, and hopefully that'll add up over time. So yeah.
That's wonderful.
I love it.
Yeah. I was just That's thinking about my students this year, and I don't really have, I have like out of 100, and I teach high school. So I've got like 120 some art kids. And I think I could count on one hand the number of them that actually raise their hand and participate this year. And it breaks my heart. They're not even talking to each other socially in the classroom. they're just sitting there silently with their identical Chromebooks and their identical Chromebook cases. And they're in these rows with these plexiglass things around the desks. And it was just, all I hear is the clickety clack of the keyboards. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me so much of like 1984, you know, like George Orwell. And there was a, or it's just, it's so upsetting to me, and I don't kind of know how to pull them out of it right now. Like I'm trying to find videos, and like I even put out crayons a few weeks ago and had them draw stuff that wasn't really related to anything. It was just, let's draw about things we like, you know, things that make us happy, just to get them to sort of put the computers away for a little while. And they were 12th grade seniors, you know, they're 17 years old. And I gave them a piece of paper and a little baggie of crayons. And they were like giddy 6-year olds, you know, they were thrilled and they were starting to have conversations. And I was almost in tears just hearing their, well, what are you drawing? I'm drawing a butterfly. What are you drawing? That was just amazing. I need to do more stuff like that and still stay on task with the curriculum. So yeah.
Well, I think that's what they love the most. Yeah, they love that the most because they feel connected to it, and it's, there's less pressure. And I think that's why they like that the most about my groups, is that art piece or that movement, or we cook, like we've made cupcakes and I call them confidence cupcakes, and we talk about confidence and cupcakes. And it's those light little activities. Like tomorrow we're painting rocks. We're making kindness rocks and inspiration rocks to give to people and to lay just like in public somewhere, just to spread some light. Nice. And I think it's those little things that they just really, they enjoy. Like you said, it's like they have that inner child. And even when they are fifth grade or younger, it still is such a healing thing to do things like that, or just even think of their own qualities and just to create something and say like, hey, I'm good at this and I feel good when I do this. And just to acknowledge that, I think is such a healing thing too. So it's those basic things.
It's creative affirmations. It's being self-aware and compassionate to yourself, and realizing, being cognitively aware, consciously aware of the talents that you have. You know, I think so many kids, especially girls, are sort of told by society to be quiet and thin and not take up too much space and don't cause me any trouble and don't cost me any money. And, you know, we're just sort of supposed to be receptacles of other people's desires and taught that our value is in service to others and not that we're allowed to have our own things. So I think the Girls Positivity Club is needed in every city, in every country, in every town, in every state, and everywhere. I think it's important. It's so important.
Thank you. Well, and I think the two major issues that girls, like you said, that they deal with is people pleasing and perfectionism, and also feeling like they have to downplay their strengths, because even girls thinking that they're good enough is a big need. And even them thinking that they're pretty, like that it's okay to think that you're pretty, or it's okay to like something about your body. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to walk around and, you know, talk about it all the time. But some of the girls will say, because I told them before, like, it's okay when we're writing positive qualities and doing this art. I said, it's okay if you want to write down that you think you're pretty. And some of them are like, well, I think I'm kind of pretty. And I think that's valid too, because, you know, as you're growing up, you don't always like all of your qualities. And I think even as an adult woman, we can all look in the mirror and pick out every little thing.
Sure.
But if we focus on the good, you know, just something good, like, oh, my, you know, my hair looks good today, or it can be anything. Just doing that is such an affirmation. And not that it's all about looks, because it's more about the inside, but I think it's okay too, to be happy with something on your outside. And you should be at some point, you know, be able to say that there's something about the way you look that you like. And I had a group one time at lunch who we did that. They asked me to, if they could compliment each other on qualities that they noticed about the other girls.
Of course.
And they were like, and one of them was like, your skin is so pretty. And this girl had just like perfect skin. She was like, really? And so then I taught them like how to how to accept a compliment and what that feels tough. Like. And yeah. And so even because some of them were being complimented on things that they didn't like about themselves, but other people saw the beauty in it. So it was this powerful experience.
That's awesome.
Unexpected, you know, just kind of, that's the thing about meeting with groups of girls and, you know, having conversations. It's like, you never know. Sometimes something comes up and it ends up being this powerful conversation. So.
Wow. Do you think that, I don't even know how to ask the question. It's not sort of in a sentence in my own head. Do you think that it's sort of in vogue in a way to not think you're pretty or not like your body, that somehow complaining about it and finding fault with it is the thing that they're supposed to do?
I think so. And I think unintentionally, I think that moms will complain about something about their body, or they'll make a comment about being fat or looking a certain way and something. And again, I don't think that we intentionally do that at all, but I think not only just what they see, you know, on TV and comparing themselves to other girls, but I think maybe even as adult women, you know, we have to be really mindful and almost be more in gratitude of our bodies instead of making negative comments about certain things, because they listen. And I think that we don't mean to, but we can pass that on to our girls.
Oh, I have definitely done that. And it has been an absolute mistake. You know, I've always battled with being curvier than I wanted or curvier than other girls, but you know, Northeastern Russian Jewish stock. And this is what my lineage, you know, I'm not a natural athlete. I do not really like working out. I do not make time for it. And I'm trying to come to peace with the fact that I'm 52, postmenopausal, post-hysterectomy. This is what my body looks like. And if it really bothered me, wouldn't I do something about it? But what I didn't realize was all along while my daughter was growing up, she was picking up on things that I might not have thought I was saying out loud, you know, like picking out certain clothes that flatter my body. And I was looking at it like, all right, I should wear longer skirts because the thicker thighs make the short skirts not look so good. And instead of thinking about it like I was ashamed of the thick thighs, I was just looking at it from an aesthetic point of view that I liked my body better with the longer skirt. But she took it as me feeling shame about the thick thighs, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what she picked up on. You know, like I'm not very comfortable with how my body looks right now. And it's uncomfortable for me to look at myself in the mirror that way. But I'm working on that, you know, but never in my life, whether I felt overweight or in shape or beautiful or not, it never affected my self-esteem, my self-value. It never made me feel less attractive or less worthy of love or less smart or less intelligent, or it didn't affect that, you know, like I might have not felt, you know, like I just didn't internalize it that way. You know, I wish this, but that's not the case. And I never had a problem having a boyfriend or, you know, getting the validation from the opposite sex when I wanted it. So clearly it wasn't getting in the way of that. Although I had a few dates when I was single that weren't so great.
Right. Well, and I had the opposite. I would say even through my weight loss, I still had to work so much on my internal self-talk and just all of that. And I would say even losing the weight, it didn't fix things. You know, I still had to work on that because I struggled with the opposite. I never felt like my body was enough. I never felt like I was pretty enough or good enough to have a boyfriend or any of those things. And it's almost like I manifested that for myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And I had a mom who dieted up and down like her entire life, struggled with her weight and still does. And, you know, instead of accepting, like you were saying, it's all about kind of that self-acceptance, that's the more powerful.
I mean, I'm not there yet, Melissa. I am far from self-acceptance. I'm an emotional eater in the middle of a pandemic. And last week I ate an entire box of Malamars in one sitting by myself.
Well, we've all done that.
I get it.
I mean, my share of Doritos and everything else. So right. I get that completely. But you know what I mean? I mean, at least though you had a better, some kind of foundation of feeling, you know, comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah. It doesn't really hold me back, you know.
Yeah.
I don't wear shorts, but that's okay. I wear skirts.
You figure it out.
Right. But now my daughter is 19. If she's listening to this, she's probably going to kill me. But she's gorgeous and thin and athletic, and she's a runner, and she's just stunning. No bias, of course. But she wrestles with the concept of her body image. And she says that it came from partially society and the world, but partially me. And, you know, it's hard to reconcile that, you know. I wish I could rewind and figure out what I said and undo it, but, you know, it's too late for that. But we just have to go forward and work on how it is now, you know, and make it better about it.
Absolutely. And at least you're having conversations about it. I mean, I think that's powerful.
Yeah, and we talk about everything.
That's good. And that's what is so important, is finding a way to communicate with your daughter. And I've even had this idea of the interactive journal, where I have them pass a journal back and forth between their mom and themselves. And so they decide on an agreed upon spot.
That's a fabulous idea.
It's awesome, because they just take any kind of notebook and they can write literally anything in it. It can be, and it doesn't. What I always caution, though, is it's not the things that are wrong. It's like, these are the qualities that I love about myself. And then the mom writes her qualities she loves about herself, or they write a story together, or they create art together, or they do something like that. And so it becomes this habit of the nonverbal communication. And so that when something does come up, it can be written down, and it doesn't have to be as scary to say out loud. And it's just not that you shouldn't. I mean, you should also have verbal conversations, but sometimes even when you're really
ease them into it.
Absolutely. And it just makes such a huge difference. And the kids actually love it. They tell me that it's one of their favorite things to do. So I think that
I just wrote it down. I'm going to do that with my daughter. Of course, when she goes back to college, I don't know how we'll do that. Maybe Google Docs or something. We'll type it.
Yes. Totally. You can just write about your day. Even if you write down a few tips, or not tips, but a few highlights of your day, and like what was great about your day. And it's just having that conversation that's very low key. There's no pressure. It's a habit. And then when something does come up, they can say, you know, hey mom, by the way, this happened. And then it's like, okay, you know, you can write it out or say, you know, would you like to have a conversation about it? And then you just kind of go about it that way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I was blessed. Like both my kids, when they were teenagers, you know, they did the typical pulling away from mom thing, because that's what's normal and age appropriate behavior to assert their independence a bit. And and everyone was like, oh, don't worry, by the time they're in their mid-20s, they'll come back. But it didn't even take that long. Yeah. I think by the time my son was 20, he was kind of done with that angsty thing. And he was like all about sharing. And my daughter, it was this past winter when she was turning 18, turning 19. And all of a sudden it was like the floodgates of honesty and now totally open. And I cultivated that by reading every possible thing I could, and by being in therapy myself, and encouraging them to visit therapists when it was appropriate, and doing that non-judgmental, totally opposite of what my mom did thing. Just totally worked, you know, knock wood.
It's crazy. Yeah, no, I think that's it. I think it's just finding those little pockets of time to have either the written or verbal conversation.
Driving works well too, because nobody's looking, there's no eye contact, you know, everyone's sort of relaxed, the car's moving, the scenery's changing, and conversations just flow. It's always been
a
good
thing. And I don't know why. Yeah. Oh, completely. And I don't know why, but my son and I have had conversations too. in the bathroom, like when he was younger, when he was taking a bath. And I don't know if like the heat in the room or something.
That's relaxing. And
yeah. And like now he's 12, so he locks the door. He doesn't want me to come in the bathroom.
Oh, of course.
But
well, that too is age appropriate. Right.
Yes. I'm like, why are you locking? I'm not coming in. But still sometimes he'll say, can you come in here a minute? And then he asks for a towel. And then it's like, and also, by the way, you know, and so it's right. A quick, you know, just a quick thing. But yeah, I think that's important.
It's lovely to have the open dialogue, even if they have to squeeze it in like that. You know, they know that they can still ask the question or confide in you because they trust how it will be received. And so they can be vulnerable because they know that you're safe, you know.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Completely.
Excellent. Okay, so Girls Positivity Club 2021 Roadmap Workshop. I am going to link
girlspositivityclub.org.
I was trying to figure out what it was, and I should have just asked you instead of staring at this piece of paper and my terrible handwriting. Okay, so I will link all of that in the show notes underneath. I keep pointing because that's where it will live later. Not that the podcast people can see me point. So I'll link all that stuff so they can get in contact with you if they have questions or want to enroll their daughters and see what it's all about. I think it's an excellent thing. I'm so glad you're here, Melissa. This has been fabulous.
I love talking with you.
Yeah, it's been really great. I feel like we could do this for hours, but you know, there's a time limit. So I hope your school year continues to go well and that your students are well and healthy. And I feel like a ticking time bomb lately. And I hope we're all okay.
Thank you. You too. I know, you know, you're doing good work and I know it doesn't always seem like it, but they are hearing you and it's amazing that you even got crayons out. You know, that was being responsive and really feeding their souls. So I think the more things we can.
I want to pull out like laughter yoga videos and stuff and just like, let's put the damn Chromebooks away for a few minutes and just do other things, you know?
Yes. Have you ever had them create their own memes?
No. What a good idea.
They love doing that. Yes. So like put up a photo and have them create memes for it. And they can almost have like, I don't know, just like a whole class conversation, but they can just like, I don't know, volunteer it some way, but you'll get so much participation and then show another one and have them make another meme for it. Like, you know, the caption or whatever.
I could probably do that on a Jamboard.
Yes.
And put up a picture and have them put the sticky notes with the meme saying on the Jamboard. And then we can all read them together and then maybe vote on the ones we like best or something. And then I could print them and put them up on our Google Classroom. Brilliant. You're writing this down.
Yeah. they always say put two teachers in a room and they'll come up with all kinds of ideas.
Yeah. You know, then yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. That's great. Oh, I'm so going to do that this week.
You'll have such high engagement. You won't even believe it.
That's by changing it. Like every day I put up a different photograph or a piece of art and we write for 5 minutes, starting with what is inspired by that piece of art. And however it morphs into other things is fine. I don't even care. And I don't even read it. I just give them all 100 for doing it. You know, I just call it the quick write challenge. We're going to write for 5 minutes straight just to get the juices flowing. But this is taking that in a different direction, a little different creativity, focusing on all the things that memes do. I like this. I'm going to change tomorrow's quick write. This is what we're going to do instead.
Oh, good. You'll have to send me a picture of it or something.
So I will. I'll take a screenshot of the Jamboards. Actually, the Jamboard's saved in my Google Drive, so I can just send you a picture of that or just share it with you directly. Yay!
Yeah.
So much fun.
Great. Yeah.
Fabulous. Yeah. Two teachers in a room. What are you going to get? Ton of stuff. Fabulous.
Yeah. All kinds of ideas.
Excellent. Well, thank you all for listening in and enjoying our conversation. We hope that that you had as much fun listening as we had talking and that you've been inspired because that's kind of the point. You know, give yourself permission to heal. Give yourself permission to love all of the things about yourself and feel proud of who you are and your talents and your open-hearted goodness and go forth and spread that kindness and empathy everywhere you go. Melissa, thank you so much for joining 100%.
Us. Thank you so very much. I've loved being here.
My pleasure. Hope you'll come back.
I would love to.
Excellent. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Permission to Heal. I hope you found it moving and inspirational. Please remember, you don't need anyone else's permission to trust and follow your heart. You have the power within you. Subscribe to Permission to Heal so you don't miss any new episodes, and please share this with your friends.